My name is Pedro Las Casas. I'm a PhD student at UFMG in Brazil. And this work was done during my internship at the Max Planck Institute for Software Systems in Germany, along with George and Vastav, and advised by Dr. Jonathan Mace. In this presentation, I'm going to talk about a system we developed called Sifter. Sifter is a sampler for distributed traces. It's a component that plugs into the typical backend pipeline of a distributed tracing framework. And its purpose is to reduce the volume of traces that you get from your distributed system. If your tracing backend don't have the processing power or storage to keep up with all of the traces that your system generates, Sifter helps you to automatically decide which traces you should keep and which traces you should throw away, keeping only the most interesting ones. So I'll start with a bit of background on distributed tracing. So distributed tracing is widely used across industry, and examples you might be familiar with include open source frameworks like Jaeger, Zipkin, and OpenTracing, as well as custom tracing systems internal to companies such as Google's Dapper and Facebook's Canopy. And what these tracing frameworks do is that they coherently record all of the activity that takes place across the distributed system for each request. So one trace is an end-to-end recording of one request. So for example, imagine we have a microservice deployment with just four services. A request to Compose Post calls an RPC to Memcached, which then calls to MongoDB. A trace of this request captures essentially a timeline of this whole execution. So it will record which services were visited and for how long, when they made calls to other services, plus any additional logs or messages that happened while executing. It's important to point out that each request of the distributed system will generate a separate trace, even if there are two requests happening at the same time. Of course, if we took two different, if two different requests took two different execution paths, their trace will look very different. The examples I've shown here, they are simple, but in practice, our systems are much more complicated, and so are the traces that we capture. So next, what do we actually use traces for? Well, as traces are generated, they get streamed to the system, to the tracing system's backend servers, where they ultimately get stored in the database and can later be queried by the distributed systems operators. So typically, the systems operator uses these traces on demand for things like diagnosing latency problems or investigating bugs. So for example, if our request latency distribution has a blip in its tail, like this one here, an operator might want to dive deeper into the cause of this blip by pulling up the traces request of this latency range. One problem that quickly arises in production systems is too much trace data. So since each trace can be quite large and detailed, if we kept all of the traces that were generated, it would overload the tracing backends and use a huge amount of storage. So instead, most tracing systems only keep the traces for a small fraction of all the requests, and they typically choose which traces to keep uniformly at random by sampling the traces. So sampling uniformly at random is certainly a simple but effective way of reducing the computational cost and storage overheads. But of course, now it means that there's a chance that when we're trying to diagnose a problem, such as those outlier latencies, we end up with no trace to look at because none of them were sampled. So with uniform random sampling, the normal requests, which are the successful common case behaviors, will be well represented in the set of sampled traces. And the uncommon edge cases and anomalies requests, they might have been completely overlooked. So this is the premise for doing biased trace sampling, which is what Sifter is designed for. So with biased sampling, when our tracing backend receives a new trace, instead of keeping or discarding with uniform probability, the sampler can look at the trace and adjust its sampling probability based on how interesting the trace looks. So the overarching goal is to increase the diversity of the traces that are kept. So when we see a trace that is unusual, we want a higher sampling probability. If we see a trace that looks a lot like every other trace, we want a lower sampling probability. So with respect to the previous latency example, we want to get the samples across the latency distribution. So to deal with the bias sampling problem, we developed Sifter. Our goal with Sifter is to avoid throwing away the more qualitative interesting traces, which are the traces that might contain the anomalies or the uncommon system behaviors. And Sifter does this by building a low-dimensional probabilistic model of the distributed system, adapting recent techniques from the era of neural language modeling. So designing an effective trace sampler turns out to be a challenge. In designing Sifter, we set out to address two major challenges that arise when trying to do biased trace sampling. And the first challenge comes from operational requirements. So we're operating production systems and trace sampling using online tasks that operate continuously over a stream of traces. So that sampling decision needs to be very fast, on the order of milliseconds, and the technique needs to scale to large volumes of traces, and it should adapt over time. And this means that we need to take care over that internal state kept by the sampler. So for example, in the previous case, we can't just keep all of the request latency ever seen because we rapidly run our space. And the second challenge, perhaps more fundamental, is that there's no good definition of what an interesting trace looks like or standard techniques to apply to trace data. So like in our previous example, we used request latency because latency is a well-established metric for production systems. And there could also be other metrics useful for these tasks. And that's what we call feature engineering. However, the problem with feature engineering is that it relies on a developer or a system operator having explicitly identified useful metrics ahead of time. So this becomes a chicken and egg problem. So we want to sample traces that will make future we want to sample traces that will make future problem diagnosis easier, but relevant metrics might not be known until after the problem occurs. So with Sifter, our guiding philosophy is that if two traces are conceptually different, then the difference will manifest internally as structural differences in the respective traces. So again, let's consider that latency example. So let's say that this is what a normal trace looks like. And let's say that in this example, the reason for the latency blip is a network issue caused by RPC timeouts and retries. So then if we look at the trace for the high latency requests, there will be clear structural differences in the trace because of those timeouts and retries. So Sifter's goal then is to make unsupervised sampling decisions directly using the trace data without using predefined high-level features extracted from the data, which is the without feature engineering part of Sifter. So of course, that if we're working directly on the trace data itself, we need to be very careful to stay within those operational constraints that I mentioned earlier. So the first question here is data representation. So what is the right way for us to represent a distributed trace? So far, I've been showing simplified examples of traces as spans, but in practice, traces can be a lot messier than this, like this trace from Hadoop distributed file system. So for each trace, we'll rely on the origin information for the events. So for example, when we start or end a span or log an event is based on where in the system source code this event was generated. And we say that events coming from the same source location, they are conceptually the same. So another important information is that we choose to represent our traces as a directed acyclic graph, so as a DAG, instead of a span. Using this representation, we can fully capture all of the concurrency in the trace, including the concurrent spans and the asynchronous communication between them. And it's worth noting that it's both fast and straightforward to convert the spans to a DAG representation. So for example, for this spam here, we end up with this graph. And as I mentioned before, each node of the graph is labeled with its source information. And these labels aren't necessarily unique, since the same lines of code can execute multiple times. The second question is then how to use minimal trace DAGs to make sampling decisions. Our approach with Sifter is based on probabilistic modeling. So each trace represents one possible execution in the system. In aggregate, the incoming stream of traces represents the various behaviors of the system. And that is the range of code paths that can be followed and the frequency that they are occurring. So we can use these traces to build a model of the system and the frequency that the different code paths are executed. And since Sifter gets to see all the traces before making a sampling decision, Sifter can incorporate every trace in its model and thereby build an unbiased model. So for each new trace, the model can tell us whether that trace represents common behaviors or not. And Sifter uses this to then make its sampling decisions. So to put all of this together, Sifter's end-to-end workflow is as follows. So first we receive the trace, we then convert it into a DAG, and we have to extract all the end length paths into these DAGs, into this graph, like this one here, for example, and this other one. So all the paths, the end length paths from our trace. And we then provide the set of paths as an input batch to Sifter's internal model. And Sifter's internal model is a two-layer neural network with the same architecture as the paragraph vector document embedding model that comes from the neural language processing. And I won't go into the details of the model's design beyond pointing out that the internal layer of the network is how we constrain the amount of state and force the model to approximate. And the output of the model is a prediction of the middle event in the path. So for each trace, we input all the trace paths together in a single batch and perform a single forward pass in the model. And from this forward pass, we get the prediction error, or the loss for the trace. And that loss tells us how well the model was able to predict the paths in these traces. So the lower the loss, the better the model was able to predict the paths in these traces. We then perform a backpropagation step to update the model and incorporate this new trace. And now we're done with the model, and the last thing to do is to make the sampling decision. So to make a sampling decision, we use the model's loss. And the higher the loss, the worse the model was able to approximate this trace. Since the model is not perfect, every trace is going to have some amount of loss. And the sampling probability itself is dependent on the loss of recently seen traces. So we consider the k most recent traces, and out of these k traces, we want the trace with the lowest loss to have zero or minimal sampling probability, and the trace with the highest loss to have the highest sampling probability. And for the in-between traces, the probability increases linearly. So given our sampling rate, it is straightforward to calculate this new bias sampling probability. And SIFTU performs this workflow for every incoming trace. If it decides not to sample a trace, the trace is then thrown away. And if it decides that trace should be sampled, then the trace continues to be processed as normal. And one of the most important things about SIFTU is that it's trained on every trace that we see, not just the ones that we choose to sample. So this will build an unbiased model, as I said, which is then useful for identifying uncommon traces because they'll be poorly represented. And so a poorly approximated trace is a trace that we want to sample. So the two evaluation questions for SIFTU, they are related to the two earlier challenges that I presented. So we first care about whether SIFTU is actually a reasonable approach in practice. And second, we are interested in how effectively SIFTU can sample the uncommon and outlier traces. So we implemented SIFTU in TensorFlow and provide compatibility for X-Trace, Zipkin, and Jaeger traces. And to evaluate SIFTU, we use three trace data sets from three different distributed systems. So the first evaluation question is one we can give a more quantitative answer to. So what is the computational cost of SIFTU? So first, by design, SIFTU has some nice properties. Because we explicitly constrain the SIFTU's internal model, it means that the amount of states that SIFTU maintains does not grow unboundedly. And in terms of the computational cost, making a sampling decision only depends on the size of the trace being considered, not on the workload whatsoever. So specifically, it depends on the total number of paths of the trace and the number of unique labels in the trace. So this table shows the average number of unique labels and paths per trace for our three data sets. And for experiments, we use paths of length 5. And across our three data sets, the sampling latencies ranged between 3 and 20 milliseconds. So the sampling latency includes the time to convert the trace into a DAG, extract all the paths, and do both the forward and back propagation passes on the neural network, and then output the sampling probability. And this was done on a single CPU core. So the other question for us to evaluate is how well SIFTU does in detecting uncommon and outlier traces. So the general approach we'll take is to replay a stream of traces from our data set and inject traces that we know are underrepresented. So to do this, we have manually separated our data sets in different trace classes based on the various features that we know ahead of time. So for example, traces of different APIs, traces with different parameters, or traces where we know an error or exception had occurred. So in this first experiment here, we replay traces from HDFS. So our workload is almost entirely of traces of read API calls. So, but at 5 points, we insert a trace of a write API call. And traces of the write API, they differ substantially from the read APIs because they follow different code paths and have many different events. So this is a clear case where SIFTU should be able to distinguish between these traces. And this graph plots the loss for the SIFTU's model. And each one of these 5 spikes corresponds to us introducing one of these write traces. And we can see that the loss is substantially higher for each one of the write traces. And this translates into a much higher sampling probability for the write calls. In this case, with a sampling probability of only 1%, the trace still have a sampling probability of more than 30%, each one of the write traces. Also, another question that we aim to answer is how does SIFTU manage imbalanced classes? So at a high level, we can say that classes that are imbalanced if we have lots of traces in a few classes, and while the other ones or other class have a small amount of traces. So we expect SIFTU to be able to deal with that and result in a well-distributed set of sample traces. So to check that, we have 10,000 traces from production traces from our production system, and we divide it in 5 different classes. So since we have 5 groups, our goal is to have 20% of traces for each one of the groups. And we compared SIFTU results to a simple random sampling and to the hierarchical clustering that was presented here last year. So here we have API 1 with 50% of all the traces. And we can see that SIFTU does a better job sampling an amount of traces close to what was expected. For API 2, SIFTU ended up selecting a smaller set, around 10%. However, for the other three, sifter samples and amount of traces pretty close to the ideal set. So in fact, if you look at API 5, it has only 2% of the total traces, and around 23% of sifter sample traces comes from this group. So to evaluate how close the sampled set of traces is from the expected set, we measure the mean squared error between the resulting set and the ideal one. So here in this table, we can see that sifter has a smaller error than the other two approaches. In fact, it has an error more than 5 times smaller than the hierarchical clustering approach, way closer to the ideal distribution of samples. So another interesting side effect of sifter is its ability to cluster the traces based on the resulting embedding. So here we have two examples where we used it, and we were able to cluster the traces from the same type together. We didn't focus on the embeddings in this work, but it's an interesting characteristic of sifter that might be considered for other tasks. And we also found some other results. So for example, we extended these scenarios where proportional traces varied over time, and we found that sifter was able to adjust these changes in distributions very effectively. So adapting over time is a very useful task because in practice, the workload mixes changes, and in an environment with continuous deployment, so too do the very nature of traces. And a side effect of this adaptation is that sifter doesn't require pre-training. It builds its models as it goes. And second, we also evaluated the effect that structure has on making sampling decisions. So to do this, we compared sifter to an identical approach, but where we flattened the traces into a timestamp order sequence of events. And this flattened representation loses concurrence information. And we found that under identical workloads, sifter could discriminate when a structure was present, but the version using the sequence could not. So more details about this and some other results can be found in the paper. So to summarize, we developed sifter, a biased sampler for distributed traces that models the distributed system behaviors and balances two goals. How do they determine whether a trace is interesting while remaining efficient and scalable? So with that, thank you for your attention.
Pedro? Any questions?
Did you try to debug some performance issue using the traces that are captured here?
No, not yet. For now, we're just focusing on the sampling of traces, so that's the next step.
Because that's the actual evaluation
exactly.
That goes
yeah,
on,
yeah.
Right? Because if you're capturing one trace, but not the dependency that actually caused the actual trace that caused that to happen.
Yeah, the idea is that for example, a bug will probably have a different structure in the trace, so we'll be able to get this one because it's very different from the normal behaviors. So we'll be able to get that and then use it to debug the actual system.
The root cause, you will not have.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
That's the issue. So my guess is this is insufficient to actually achieve what you're trying to achieve. I think you have to build further from this.
Yeah, our goal is not, final goal is to get the root cause. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but for now we're focusing more on the sampling approach of yeah.
Okay, cool talk. I didn't get the sense, or maybe I just didn't understand, but are you also incorporating performance characteristics into the machine learning model, or are you just looking at structure?
No, just the structure, yeah. We can add, for example, latency or something like that, but for now we're just trying to pay attention, because we want to do it without feature engineering. So what we want to look at is the structure of the traces and try to see the difference between them. So our focus is on the structure of the trace.
Okay.
We don't use any other information.
I see. And I guess this is maybe peripherally related to Roxana's question. You could I wonder if you're considering extending this in the future so that the sampling decisions aren't necessarily independent on a per-request basis. There may be correlations across requests that occur in this very tight window or something. Maybe they represent the same semantic behavior. So I wonder if there is an extension in here that would help with that too.
So I'm not sure if I completely understand what you're saying.
So your sampling decisions are completely independent just based on the trace structure.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It could be that, okay, one trace is anomalous, but it may be because of some effect caused by a request that just executed previously,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it might be worth it to capture clusters of traces that are in a tight window. So I was wondering, are there like extensions that you're considering in the future?
We can use it for example, the using the embeddings, for example, we can like perform the clustering of the traces to try to.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I have similar comment and questions. So I look at traces like that frequently, but I'll admit I only look at them if something is going wrong. So it seems to me that if you can bias your sample, I mean, this starts to go against some of what you were talking about, but if you can bias your samples towards things that are anomalous and maybe are willing to discard samples when things are running fine, you get yourself the opportunity to collect more samples for problems and also do things like cluster. So you get the normal looking things that came right before the problem came, which you might get if you just keep cluster on time and consider those a unit. Simple things like that would give you a lot of interesting insights into what happens right before you start missing your SLO, for example.
That's the goal. After you have the sample traces, you can do like perform this clustering and try to understand what happened in the normal execution and what happened with the anomalous, with the most interesting traces that you sampled.
In the vision,
yeah.
All right, let's turn the speaker again.